Welcome to the deep dive. Scrolling through commercial real estate headlines lately, it really feels a bit like whiplash.
It does, doesn't it? One minute you see economic uncertainty, the next it's all this robust market activity.
Exactly. It's a fascinating, sometimes contradictory picture.
Definitely.
So our mission today is to try and cut through some of that noise. We're taking a deep dive into the most important nuggets, the key insights from recent commercial real estate news.
Specifically looking at roughly August 14th through the 22nd, 2025.
Right. And we'll focus quite a bit on the, well, surprisingly resilient retail sector and also the absolutely booming Dallas-Fort Worth market.
Two really key areas right now.
Our goal is just to give you a clear, concise understanding of what's happening, why it matters for you, and maybe what to watch for as we navigate these complex market dynamics.
That's good. Let's dig in.
So the sources we've looked at, they really reveal a nuanced picture. It's far from simple doom and gloom or, unbridled optimism.
Especially in retail, yeah. We're seeing significant shifts, both in how consumers are behaving and where investment money is going.
And that's creating this unique landscape, challenges, opportunities.
Understanding those underlying drivers is, I think, crucial to really grasp what's going on.
Absolutely. And when we look at the national retail trends, the consumer is definitely, well, at the heart of it all.
Always is.
The latest retail sales data for July 2025, it tells an interesting story. So top-line retail sales rose 4.3% year over year. Core retail was up 4.7%.
Which on the surface sounds pretty promising, right?
It does. But the real insight, and this is critical for you to understand, is that beneath that surface, the actual volume growth was pretty sluggish, just 1.4%.
Okay, so people are spending more money, but not necessarily buying much more stuff. Inflation's playing a role there.
Exactly. An analysis suggests a significant chunk of that spending, maybe $6.2 billion, was what they call pull-forward activity,
You mean?
meaning money spent now, maybe driven by big promotions like Amazon Prime Day or back-to-school sales.
Or maybe even a little anxiety about future prices, getting things bought before they go up more.
Could be, but it signals it's not necessarily consistent, confident consumer demand driving it. It's more event-driven. It hints at some market fragility.
And what's truly striking, I think, is this idea that consumers are, quote, bargain hunting and bracing for future shocks.
We saw that play out in the numbers. Robust sales gains in categories like home furniture up 5.8% and apparel, which climbed 7.4%. It really does. This whole selective spending pattern, it seems like a critical sign of a, well, a broader economic shift.
It connects directly to something Meredith Whitney, often called the Oracle of Wall Street, she recently warned about, a brewing bifurcated economy.
Bifurcated meaning split.
Exactly. She cautions that wealthier households are continuing to spend quite strongly while lower income consumers are facing really mounting pressure.
Okay.
And her prediction is, well, almost counterintuitive. She thinks discount chains and dollar stores, the ones we usually see as defensive in downturns, could be among the hardest hit this time.
That is interesting. Why usually they benefit when people trade down?
Because their specific customer base, the economically challenged group, is under even greater strain now. Their budgets are just stretched incredibly thin.
That's a fascinating point. So, what kind of early signs or mechanisms does she point to that make that group more vulnerable now compared to past downturns?
Well, stepping back, the broader data does seem to support this widening divide she's talking about. High earners, let's say those making over $250,000 a year, they now account for about 50% of all U.S. consumer spending.
50%? Wow. What was it before?
It was around 36% 3 decades ago. That's a significant shift.
Huge shift.
And for retail landlords, this isn't just some abstract trend. It's becoming a strategic imperative.
Meaning they need to adapt their properties.
Exactly. They're being advised to really curate their tenant mixes carefully to make sure they serve a broad income spectrum. It's a hedge against what some are calling an hourglass spending pattern.
Hourglass, like strong at the top and bottom, weak in the middle.
Precisely. You see strength at the high end, continued demand for essentials and value at the lower end, but real pressure on that mid-market segment is like the sand flows to the top and bottom bulbs.
So how is this complex consumer picture actually shaping the physical spaces, the stores, the shopping centers? What does it mean for the real estate itself?
Well, the physical retail market is definitely showing a split in demand for space, reflecting that consumer behavior.
Okay.
While overall retail is showing some unexpected resilience, it's definitely an uneven landscape. Smaller storefronts, They seem to be thriving.
But the big box spaces.
They're genuinely struggling. It's a tale of two markets almost.
So, looking at the numbers from the first half of 2025, tenant openings actually outpaced closures by about 21 million square feet.
Which sounds positive. That marks 10 straight quarters of rising net demand.
It does. However, and this is the big challenge, we've also seen over 10,000 store closures in the last 18 months.
Wow, 10,000.
Yeah, totaling around 140 million square feet of space, mostly from bankruptcies of those large format chains like Joann, Rite Aid, Big Lots.
Right, those bigger footprints.
And that has led to two straight quarters of negative net absorption. More space was vacated than leased. About negative 14.5 million square feet just in the first half of 2025.
So openings are happening, but these big closures are leaving significant holes.
Exactly. And a critical point for you to grasp is that the sheer volume of these vacant big box and junior anchor spaces, you know, 10,000 to 50,000 square feet, sometimes more, they're incredibly difficult to backfill.
Why is that? Just too much space?
Partly. But they often require costly reconfigurations, splitting them up, redoing infrastructure. And many of the expanding retailers today, they just don't want or need that kind of space or expense.
Okay, that makes sense. It directly contrasts with what you said about small footprints.
Totally. Nearly 90% of all the lease deals in Q2 were for spaces under 5,000 square feet.
90%.
And get this, two-thirds of those deals were even smaller, below 2,500 square feet.
So really small shops. Who's taking those?
It's largely fast casual restaurants, quick service restaurants, QSRs, and those essential service-oriented shops, think nail salons, small clinics, things like that.
Right, the kinds of businesses that need less square footage.
And adding to this dynamic, new retail construction is really at a crawl. Just 4.9 million square feet of starts in Q2. High costs, general caution.
So if you're a growing retailer needing space, new builds aren't really the main option.
Increasingly, no. They're turning more and more to second-generation spaces, spaces that were previously occupied.
Makes sense. Is that speeding things up?
It seems so. The average downtime for a vacated store before it gets released has actually shrunk to about 7.1 months. That's a pretty significant indicator of this demand for existing, smaller spaces.
Almost like musical chairs, but for retail locations.
Huh. Yeah, something like that. Everyone's become a retail ninja. Get in, get set up, mission accomplished.
So bringing this back to the investment side, despite these big closures and the negative net absorption figures we talked about, investment capital is actually still flowing into retail, which is maybe surprising.
It is a bit counterintuitive.
U.S. retail investment volume for the first half of 2025 hit $28.5 billion. That's up 23% year over year.
23%, that's substantial.
It is, and it actually exceeds the long-term historical average for investment volume in retail.
So what are investors targeting then, if not just any retail?
It seems they're favoring mixed-use retail assets places, combining retail with residential or office, and focusing on high-performing metro areas. They're betting on long-term resilience in those specific spots.
And how are these deals getting funded? Are traditional banks leading the charge?
Interestingly, no. We're seeing non-bank lenders and the commercial mortgage-backed securities market.
Yeah.
The CMBS market really stepping up to fill the financing gap as traditional banks seem to be pulling back a bit.
That's a massive shift in how projects get funded, isn't it? But what does that increasing reliance on non-bank lenders and CMBS mean for the, say, the risk profile of these retail investments down the line? Are investors just trading one set of risks for another to get yield?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Right now, the market certainly seems to think the reward outweighs the risk, or at least that the risk is manageable in these specific deals.
Got an example.
Yeah, a pretty concrete one. Wells Fargo recently led a $460 million single borrower CMBS deal.
Okay.
This was to refinance 12 retail centers across 9 states. They're part of Bridge 33 Capital's portfolio, which is 91% leased and anchored by solid tenants like TJX, Dick's Sporting Goods.
So quality assets, strong tenants.
Exactly. And the fact that this deal got done and done through the CMBS market, it clearly demonstrates there's still significant investor appetite for securitized retail debt, provided the underlying assets are perceived as strong.
Okay. Now, if we turn our attention specifically to Texas,
wow,
what immediately jumps out is just how much of a powerhouse the Dallas-Fort Worth market has become.
Oh, absolutely. D. DFW really stands out nationally.
It's the most active U.S. market for new retail space. We're talking nearly 7.15 million square feet under construction right now.
7 million square feet? That's huge.
It's a whopping 15% of all the retail space currently under construction across the 60-plus U.S. markets that are tracked.
15% in one metroplex. That's incredible.
And it's not just DFW. Austin's got about 3.4 million square feet underway. Houston around 3.9 million. They're also ranking high.
So it's a Texas-wide phenomenon, really, driven by that incredible population growth, presumably.
Absolutely. And this level of activity, this growth, it's exactly why we at Eureka Business Group specialize in the DFW market. It's undeniably where the action is for retail.
Makes sense to focus there. What are some specific examples driving that DFW number?
Well, look at Grand Prairie. Their city council just annexed about 900 acres for a project called Goodland.
Goodland.
Yeah. It's part of a massive 5,000-acre master plan community being developed by Provident Realty Advisors.
5,000 acres. That's practically a small city.
It really is. They're envisioning thousands of homes, multiple retail centers, parks, civic facilities, even a 50-acre town center.
Wow. What's a potential scale?
They estimate it could eventually house 50,000 residents and generate something like $5 billion in taxable value for the city.
Incredible. And the officials see this as a way to attract new retail.
Exactly. Bringing desired amenities and retailers directly to where the new population growth is happening. It's a huge bet on continued expansion in that part of the metroplex.
And it's not just new builds, right? Or existing players expanding too.
Definitely. Another intriguing piece is HEB. They're investing in a big new warehouse in Fort Worth, 139,000 square feet.
Okay, but that's a warehouse, not a store.
Right. It's not for shoppers. It's purely to support their really aggressive North Texas expansion strategy. It highlights the logistics side needed to serve all these new stores and people.
Driven by that population growth again. How many new residents are we talking?
The region gained over 560,000 residents just between 2020 and the start of 2024. That's fueling everything.
That explains the need for logistics support. Any other types of projects?
Yeah, we're also seeing interesting adaptive reuse. There's a historic downtown Dallas hotel that's slated for conversion into a mixed-use residential project.
Ah, turning old buildings into new uses.
Right. It reflects that broader push for more downtown living, which in turn has the potential to spur more ancillary retail, restaurants, nightlife as more people actually live in the city's core again.
So looking wider, what are the broader factors drawing all this investment and development specifically to Texas beyond just population growth?
Well, several things seem to be converging. For instance, the new Federal Opportunity Zone 2.0 program seems to be disproportionately benefiting Texas markets.
Funneling tax-advantaged investment into these areas.
Exactly. Into commercial projects, including retail development. That's certainly helping.
And we see strength in other Texas metros, too, right? You mentioned Houston earlier.
Yeah, Houston provides another compelling example. Hines just paid about $137.6 million for a project called the Montrose Collective.
Montrose Collective.
It set a new local price per square foot record, around $727. It's a mixed-use complex, includes about 50,000 square feet of high-end retail and restaurant space.
So big money betting on top-tier urban mixed use, even at record prices, shows confidence.
Definitely. And even in the Austin metro, look at Cedar Park. There's a development called Cedar View.
Cedar View. What's going in there?
It's going to host Texas's second largest retail store, an NFM Nebraska Furniture Mart, at 1.3 million square feet.
1.3 million. Just for one store?
Yeah. And also a huge Scheels sporting goods store, about 357,000 square feet. It's designed to be a massive regional draw.
So these aren't just neighborhood centers. These are destination projects banking on attracting people from miles around.
Absolutely. And they're all underpinned by those strong demographics and what's generally seen as a pro-growth environment in the state.
It's clear the growth here is substantial, almost staggering in places like DFW. But, you know, how sustainable is this pace? Are there any potential speed bumps or, I guess, long-term challenges for markets like DFW if that population growth were to slow or if the bigger economic tides were to shift more dramatically?
That's the critical question, isn't it? Especially as we turn now to some of the economic headwinds that are still out there, impacting commercial real estate development and maybe consumer confidence, too.
Like what specifically?
Well, for instance, the new Trump administration tariffs that have been announced, like a potential 35% tariff on Canadian goods, that's expected to significantly increase construction costs.
Right.
Materials costs going up. Do we have any sense of the scale of impact?
We can get an idea. The National Association of Home Builders, the NAHB, They previously noted that tariffs already in place by March 2025 had added something like $9,200 to the cost of an average new home.
Okay, that's already significant.
And now, with these latest potential hikes, some experts estimate builder costs could rise by another $7,500 to $10,000 per home.
Wow, that's a substantial hit, direct impact for developers, and ultimately it gets passed on to consumers, right?
Usually does. And then there's the Federal Reserve. They seem caught between a rock and a hard place. Still worried about inflation versus the labor market.
Exactly. Ongoing worries about both. I mean, most Fed officials seem to agree it's just too soon to think about cutting interest rates.
Even though the latest inflation number, July's consumer prices, rose maybe a bit less than expected, about 2.7% annually.
Right. Even with that slightly softer number, the consensus seems to be hold steady for now. So, the takeaway for you. Don't hold your breath waiting for cheaper borrowing costs in commercial real estate anytime soon. Rates look set to stay elevated.
It's certainly interesting then to watch how investors are trying to, as you said earlier, separate the signal from the noise in this really mixed environment.
Yeah.
Interest rates are likely to stay up. The federal funds rate is projected around 3.9% by late 2025. And the 10-year Treasury yield, it keeps defying expectations, right? It rose from about 3.6% to 4.6%.
Higher for longer seems to be the reality.
Seems to be. And yet, despite those figures, that investment resilience we talked about persists. Investors spent 25% more on U.S. commercial real estate in the first half of 2025 compared to the same period in 2024.
25% more, even with higher rates.
And Q2 deal volumes specifically climbed 18% year over year. CBRE, for example, they're still maintaining a projection for 10% annual growth in overall investment volume for the year.
Yeah.
And they see cap rates showing stability.
So on one hand, you've got this impressive investment resilience, big money flowing in, especially to quality assets and growth markets. But on the other hand, you have things like small businesses feeling maybe a bit less optimistic.
Right. The Small Business Optimism Index did dip slightly, down to 98.6 in June.
And consumer credit trends showing some caution.
Yeah. Overall consumer credit growth persisted, but revolving credit, think credit cards, it actually fell in the latest numbers for the first time since November 2024.
Suggests people might be getting wary about taking on more high interest debt, maybe pulling back on discretionary spending.
Exactly. So how do those two conflicting signals, the investment surge versus the underlying consumer caution, how do they really influence where capital is flowing, especially into retail real estate right now?
It feels like a very delicate balance the market is navigating. That investment seems laser focused on perceived quality and growth, while the broader consumer base is, well, being careful.
Which means the future health of retail, particularly for those mid-market or maybe even the discount segments Meredith Whitney warned about, really depends heavily on that consumer sentiment holding up or improving.
Okay, so to quickly summarize what we've really dug into today. First, retail is showing some maybe unexpected resilience. It's adapting to these value-conscious consumers and their shifting preferences for smaller, more service-oriented spaces.
Even while those big-box properties face some real challenges with backfilling vacant space.
Right. Second, we've highlighted that Texas, and particularly the Dallas-Fort Worth market, really stands out as a national leader in retail construction, and it's a huge magnet for investment right now.
Driven by that potent combination of robust population growth and strategic, often large-scale development projects.
And finally, despite those ongoing economic headwinds, things like new tariffs, potentially rising costs, interest rates staying elevated, there's still a strong flow of capital actively targeting high-quality assets in these specific high-growth markets.
So the message for you listening seems clear. Understanding the specifics, the nuances, targeted knowledge that's really your best asset in this dynamic environment.
Well said.
And, you know, this all raises, I think, an important question for the future, something for you to maybe mull over.
Okay.
How will this increasing emphasis on flight to quality in retail, combined with that ongoing challenge of redeveloping and backfilling these large vacant spaces, how will that ultimately reshape the tenant mix and the investment strategies in dynamic, growing markets like Dallas-Fort Worth in the coming years? Will we see maybe an acceleration of adaptive reuse or perhaps entirely new models emerge to fill those voids?
That is a compelling question to think about. What does fill that space and how does it change the landscape?
Excellent point. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the latest in commercial real estate.
We hope you feel better informed and maybe a bit more ready to navigate these evolving market dynamics.
We'll catch you next time.